Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are going to have a conversation about the Middle Passage and this incredible exhibit, painting, theater that's going to take place at the Creative Alliance. Joining us is one of the world's great artists, renowned artists, whose stuff has been in everywhere from the Smithsonian to paintings across the globe, and an amazing human being and thinker, artist in residence at the Creative Alliance as well, creator of the Middle Passage mural, Joseph Norman, joins us by phone. He's on his way back to Baltimore. Dr. Leslie King Hammond is with us, and she's a graduate dean emeritus at MICA and founding director of the Center for Race and Culture at the Maryland Institute College of Art. Morgan's own M.K. Asante is with us in the studio, professor of creative writing and film in the Department of English and Language Arts at Morgan State University. His latest book is It's Bigger Than Hip Hop. And in studio, Bashi Rose, actor, playwright, director, co-founder of the Men of Nomo, Monomo Theater, director of the film Me, Myself, and Us, who's on the show here about that recently, and is going to be performing in this space. Rosalind Cawthon will be with us in a minute. She's a playwright and performing short pieces about the Middle Passage this Friday, October 14th at the Creative Alliance. And welcome all. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thank you.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I don't know if you – I was going to read this, M.K. Asante, but I want you – would you read it instead?
Yeah, no problem.
Because you wrote it.
Yeah. Great.
So you might as well.
Yeah. Let's do it.
And this is what you wrote that sits – as you walk into the Creative Alliance and see this massive mural – that Joe Norman has put together, painted, and created on three walls. Under it, as you come in, is the piece that M.K. Asante wrote to introduce it. So please read it to us.
Yeah, and what this piece was intended to do was just give some contextualization into what the Middle Passage was. And so it reads, "The Middle Passage was the infamous middle leg of a three-part voyage that forced millions of Africans from their homeland and enslaved them in the Americas. Of all the legs of the voyage, this one, this middle passage, held the most unspeakable crimes and horrors. The middle passage begins when African captives, held in deplorable slave dungeons along Africa's west coast, are forced through the door of no return and onto European slave ships. As Olato Equiano, who was kidnapped and enslaved at 11 years old, recounts in his autobiography the interesting narrative of the life of Olato Equiano, or Gustavo Vasa, the African. Quotes, "When I looked around the ship, too, and saw a large furnace of copper boiling and a multitude of black people of every description chained together, every one of their countenance expressed dejection and sorrow, I no longer doubted of my fate, and quite overpowered with horror and anguish, I fell motionless on the deck and fainted. I asked if we were not to be eaten by those white men with horrible looks, red faces, and long hair." End of quotes. The Middle Passage has two significations. First, it is the physical space between Africa and the Americas and refers to the Atlantic Ocean that was crossed by the ships bringing Africans to the Americas and Caribbean for enslavement. Secondly, it refers to the tremendous psychological and mental horrors suffered by Africans who were forced from their homes to the Americas. Both of these ideas, these significations, are relevant to an understanding of the metaphor Middle Passage. Frederick Douglass, who was born into slavery in Maryland, once said that slavery is one of those monsters of darkness to whom the light of truth is death. Joseph Norman's powerful depictions of the Middle Passage represent that light of truth. A light bright enough to guide us through our collective histories and to burn out the possibility of recurrence.
Thank you, M.K. Asante. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Joe Norman, welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us. I look forward to meeting you when you get to Baltimore again.
Thank you.
So, to talk, could you just give, again, contextualize this moment and talk a bit about the mural that you've been creating all these years, the space it is in, and what this mural is. If you could just set it up for us, then we'll turn to Leslie.
Yeah, I think what I tried to do initially, I mean, the Middle Passage is a very broad, gargantuan task to try to understand and to try to create it or to recreate it. It's been done many times before. But I had to come with a different hook, a different angle. So I came at it as looking at it from the standpoint of being a love story. So in my particular thing, you find this couple, they're with child, and you can follow them through four sort of symphonic movements throughout the piece, and you track their journey. And then when they survive all of the horrors of the Middle Passage and the wars and the conflicts, when they finally arrive in America, they are auctioned and then separated. And thus this incredible rupture happened. And you see where the couple was separated, and they are never to be rejoined, which is very symbolic. When MK talks about the two physical spaces again, you know, you can understand the physical kind of deprivation that it had on a nation of people, and also the mental. So my attempt was to come at this piece from a new angle, and my angle was to look at it from the standpoint of being a love story, and also to make it large enough make it large enough so that it was bigger than life, a mural that's bigger than life. It had to be a large work to accommodate an epic event. So I thought about the most complicated work to try to compose in classical music would be a symphony. So I thought about a symphony in line, so a symphony in bold line. And that was my vision of it, and it took 10 years to conceive and work out, and it took 21 days to actually execute.
Wow.
Wow.
It really is. And Dr. Leslie King-Hammond is with us as well by phone. And Leslie, thanks so much for doing this, especially at the last minute. I really appreciate you being part of the show.
No problem.
So talk about for you the significance of this, because you've helped bring this here and put this together. Talk about the significance of this particular project coming here to Baltimore.
Well, I think that this is a very special moment in Baltimore's history, because Baltimore and the state of Maryland has its own legacy with slavery. And one of the greater difficulties in the public at large and in the national discourse is the difficulty that we still have having a conversation about the impact that is still resonating today around the Middle Passage, around slavery, around people's relationships with each other, and the impact that it's had on its histories. So this is a Herculean event for the Creative Alliance to take this on as their mission, to say, look, let's begin to find a way to have this conversation. And, you know, we go back to periods in history like the Middle Ages when people could not read. They couldn't read, so that's one of the reasons the great cathedrals were created. And the great orchestration of beautiful images and stained glass windows so they could tell the story. They could tell the story to a people who couldn't read, but who were still confused, confounded, amazed, curious about this new religion. Well, in contrast, if we flip the script, slavery in the Middle Passage is one of those things people don't want to talk about or can talk about easily. So one of the greater, more effective ways to do this is to use the visualization process, that mechanism that was used during the Middle Ages and throughout history. Even it goes back to cave paintings and rock paintings. And find a way to visually engage, embrace, incite, and provoke the imagination of people to begin to talk about this thing, because we can't come to a holistic sensibility about what it means to be human in the 21st century until we get some resolution and a handle on the demons that have dogged us.
And Leslie, let me just pick up on that last point. A couple of things really struck me as I was walking around the mural today in at the Creative Alliance. And the big events this Friday night, which we'll talk about, people all should come down. It's going to be an amazing event, Friday, October 14th, and we'll talk about that, Joe. So Norman will be there, and you'll be there. MK Asante, will you be there?
Yes,
you'll be
there.
You'll be there.
Yeah.
And Bashi, of course, and see this mural and all the events are taking place. But what you just said, Leslie, made me think of this, is that when you talk about the effect, the power of Middle Passage, that experience on the 21st century. Let's wrestle with that for a minute. I mean, what is that? Because, you know, most people look at that and go, wait a minute. This was before there was the United States of America. This
That's
was
right.
15, 16, 17, 1800s. We're talking about a long time ago. What does this have to do with who we are now? How does this culturally, physically, spiritually, mentally, psychologically affect the 21st century?
Well, you know, you ask a very profound question, Mark, and this is tied deeply to even to Obama and why it is we are having, our nation is having such difficulty in various sectors embracing his presence, his importance, his power. And that's because we still have the residuals of what I call post-traumatic stress slavery syndrome that is alive and well in our culture.
Right.
And because it is still so alive and well, and because people don't understand the nature of how it has affected its life, their lives, its life, everyone's life into the 21st century, it's because silence. Nobody knows how to talk about it. So they relegate it to the issue of race. And race is a construct. And nobody wants to stand up and say, this race thing is ridiculous. There is nothing in science that says there is a race. However, the residual of a race question is the absolute apparent and dogged presence of racism, the byproduct. So how do we get at this byproduct in the 21st century, in the public arena? We must find a way to have an open, engaged dialogue. And if it is through the presentation of a magnificent spread, an epic drama that is placed on the war that makes you confront its reality and say, wait a minute, how do I as an individual person feel about this? And if you can turn to the left and the right and find somebody that you can have that conversation with, then you will begin to understand how much more work we have to do as a nation and as a global universe.
MK, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just agreeing with what she's saying. It's really powerful. You know, we made a film some years back called 500 Years Later that dealt with the psychocultural effects of slavery and colonialism on the diaspora, and we went to over 25 countries, and we interviewed people, and we talked to scholars and everyday people and all types of people about these effects, which are still with us. So I'm just agreeing and kind of testifying.
Well, let me go to Joe, and then you come back to me before you have to roll MK, go back to your class. Unless you just want to leave them to their own devices, it's fine. But what do you think,
well,
Joe Norman?
Well, I think when I hear what Leslie says, you know, it's that silence that is the real scary part, because we don't know sometimes what lies in the darkness of silence at times. So with silence, you get revisionist history. You get people saying that black families were better off during the time of slavery than they are under the presidency, the tenure of Barack Obama. You get politicians saying this openly. You get people just saying all kinds of things that just really don't make sense. And you need a monument for this particular event so that we can lay our burden down. We can go to a place, have this national discussion. It's our history. It's our sin. It's our collective moment in time. And we need to have this discussion. But we can't have this discussion with a work of art that can be easily placed in a vault, can be put back on a shelf. My objective was to create a very heroic piece that was monumental in its scale and had a scope large enough that it could not be ignored. And we definitely need a monument for this. We need a place where we can go and understand and mark the occasion of this event. And so that was my point of view in trying to create this piece. And it took forever to make, but I'm glad that I finally finished it.
I'm glad we are too.
I want to commend Joe for the piece, obviously, and it's really great to be here. But I also want to just add, you know, something that I remember when we're talking about what Leslie's saying about silence. Dr. King used to say silence is betrayal. And I think that's true for those of us in this day and age who kind of recognize the power of what it is and these effects, that silence is a kind of betrayal. And that's why it's so important that what Bashi and Joe and Leslie are doing.
And Rosin Coughlin just joined us. He'll be performing short pieces about the Middle Passage this Friday, October 14th, at the Creative Alliance. Rosin, glad you're with us.
Hi, thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
So we can't see you in the studio with us, but glad you're here anyway.
Yes.
I'm curious, This, I want to pick up on a theme here and then come back to the heart of this, what's going on this week there. But I think that kind of wrestling with what we think are the psychological, cultural effects of the Middle Passage 500 years later. What is the collective psychological effect of that on us?
I think, if I can jump in here,
cause, Leslie,
cause I'm I'm so shy.
I know, but that's always why I love you so much, baby. You know, you've always been shy.
Yeah, I'm trying to get over it. I'm trying to do something with it. I'm trying to do something about it. One of the constant issues that keeps coming up is why it is that we can't work together collectively as a people towards a common goal. Why is it that we have to either be ghettoized or categorized or boxed into spheres of issues or concerns because we don't understand how history connects to the contemporary reality that we live? And the contemporary reality says that our young black youth, and, you know, we have a project going on in Baltimore right now called the Black Male Identity Project.
Right.
And it is about this persistence of negating the presence, the identity, the integrity of the black male. This project is focusing on the youth. This is directly connected to the legacy of the Middle Passage, because during the period of slavery in the United States, you know, Maryland could not produce rice. Maryland could not produce indigo. Maryland's plantations did not produce cotton. In the aftermath of the importation of slaves into the United States, do you know what Maryland's responsibility was? It was to produce new slaves from the plantation to feed this economy of human bondage. Mm. Now, this attitude, this systemic behavior that says that it's okay to belittle, demean people does not go away with any ease. And it is a relentless, dogged project that must be assumed by everyone who lives on this planet to address it. Every way we see it manifesting its dark, ugly head of betrayal. I love that. I love that, Asante, the betrayal. It is a betrayal of a human dignity. And until we get back to respecting the humanity of all people, we will always be dogged by the nightmare and the daymare. We're living the daymare.
Yes.
I don't call them nightmares. I call them daymares. Every damn day. Every damn day. There is an issue that ties right back to this fact that somebody is looking at me saying, you're not quite human. You are not quite, you know, the thing that we should respect. So I'm going to give you some resistance. I'm going to give you some pushback. And those people, those situations, those institutions don't even understand why they are giving the pushback, why they are creating the resistance.
And, Bosch, we haven't had a word from you, which you're uncharacteristically quiet. So before we go to break in here, one last thought from M.K. Asante, because he has to go back and teach a class.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to say, you know, I'm, again, thrilled to be here. I'm really excited for Saturday's discussion. I'm excited to see your work, Bashi, and hear Roslyn and Leslie and France Crest Welding and Ray Wimbush and see Joe's work again. So I'll just be at the Creative Alliance
Friday night.
So
right.
I'll see everyone there. Peace.
All right, bro. Take care.
Right.
Have a good class,
thanks.
MK.
Okay, take care, MK.
Treat your students well.
All right.
Bashi?
Yes. Well, I'll just jump in. I mean, one of the obvious reminiscences of it is the prison system. So now you have, young black men and women, you know what I'm saying, mm-hmm. being funneled into the prison system in a similar fashion that, our African ancestors were being funneled into the slavery system in Maryland, as Dr. Leslie Hammond pointed out. And on Friday evening, we're going to be showing a film excerpt dealing with that to a certain extent, where the piece is called Hassan Brooks, Madman, the Hassan Brooks story, and it's a young man dealing with schizophrenia. And he still has enough mental clarity to question, you know, how his situation came about. But he also exhibits that resistance that was always a part of our experience ever since the Middle Passage. We were resisting from the beginning of slavery and still continue to resist to this day. So I think that's another important element to look at, the fact that, you know, despite our experiences, we still have the strength and the resilience to overcome a lot of. There's still a lot that we still have to deal with and overcome, but we still have that strength and that resilience. And it's always important that, you know, that we ignite that and that we embrace it.
Go ahead. I heard a breath. Somebody wants to say something. Is that a breath?
This is Roz. I just kind of wanted to jump in a little bit, and I'm sorry I couldn't make it to the studio. Traffic was really crazy.
That's right. We got you. It's okay.
Here.
You're here.
But, right, one of the things that I wanted to pick up on a little bit of with relating to what Bashi was saying is the piece that I've created is focusing a little bit on the destruction of the Black family. And as a single mother myself, I get that question a lot of, why are there so many family homes in the Black community? Why are there so many Black women who are raising babies on their own? And kind of touching back what Dr. Leslie King Hammond said about our young Black boys and the Black Male Identity Project, a lot of them don't have father figures. And why is that? Where does that come from? Why are there so many Black homes that are broken in this fashion? And the piece that I worked on is really short, just sort of addresses that. Are we facing so many Black families that are split today? Does it have anything to do with the men that were sold off from their women and the children that were sold off from their mothers or their fathers, and that separation that existed during the Middle Passage and throughout slavery? We're seeing some of those same things today when we look at our family structure. And what are things that we can do about it? And I think what Bashi brought up is a point. We can point to the problems, but there's still a sense of resiliency and a sense of strength among Black people, among the Black family, the extended Black family, to keep it going. The grandmas that come in and help out, and mm-hmm. the aunties and the uncles that come in and help out as much as they can. But I think it's important that we investigate our family structure and where does this come from. So often we want to blame the oppressed. Why won't they get themselves together? When a lot of times it's looking at what are some of the issues that the oppressor has caused to have us in the situation that we're in today with our families.
We're going to take a very brief break, and we have a caller. I think it's Issa or Isa, ISA is our first caller up. We're going to come back to that call. We're going to explore the pieces that both Bashi and Rosin are presenting, talk more about with Joseph Norman about the piece he's created and what we're saying to the world, and some questions I have about the power of the Middle Passage, both negatively and positively. So all that when we come back. That might sound a little strange, but I'll get into that. So don't go away. We'll be right back as we explore the Middle Passage, this incredible exhibit and happening at the Creative Alliance. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. And MeQ is a credit union, which means it belongs to you. It's not just an ordinary old bank. For more information, www.mecu.com. You can find out more about it by going to steinershow.org and clicking on the MeQ banner at the top of our website. We're talking about this incredible mural that is now up at the Creative Alliance, The Middle Passage, painted by the incredible Joseph Norman, one of America's great artists, who's also an artist in residence here at the Creative Alliance. This stuff is hung throughout the globe. And this Friday night, October 14th at 8 o'clock, there'll be an entire evening with Rosin Coughlin, Joseph Norman, Bashi Rose is with us, Dr. Francis Gress Weising, and Dr. Raymond Winbush, reflecting on this, performances, and more, but taking place at Creative Alliance. The number there is 410-276-1651 to get ticket information and to join them. We are joined here now by Joseph Norman, the artist himself, creator of the Middle Passage mural, Dr. Leslie King Hammond, graduate dean emeritus and founding director at the Center for Race and Culture at the Maryland Institute College of Art. Bashi Rose, actor, playwright, director, co-founder of Domo Theater, director of the film Me, Myself, and Us. We're showing a film Friday night as well.
Yeah, we're showing an excerpt from that.
From this film. Rosin Cawthon is with us, a playwright, and he's the performing short pieces about the Middle Passage this Friday, October 14th, at the Creative Alliance. 410-319-8888 is the number here. The first caller up is Issa. You're on the air. Is it Issa or Issa?
Hold up, everybody. Issa. How y'all doing?
Good. Welcome.
Good. How you doing?
What's up, Issa?
She was good. I'd like to respond to the question that you posed to the psychological effects of slavery.
Okay.
Right? The process of slavery has left our people underdeveloped, socially, mentally, and in many other ways. But on the flip side, it has given African people an advantage physically, right? For example, if you enslaved 4, 5, 6 generations, it's without a doubt that that next generation is going to be born strong and resilient, as today you may see in professional sports and so forth. But the issue is race, and the African men especially, all African people, but all African men especially need to organize and use that strength to change our position in this world. So the effects of slavery has left our people underdeveloped, and the only way that we're going to get out of this situation, the mural is wonderful, and all of our other efforts are wonderful, but the men have to organize and exercise that strength in order to change our position in this world. And that's just the answer of it all. So we can talk about it all day. We can paint pictures all day and make movies all day. But until the men physically get together, nothing is going to change in this world. And you can't expect Europeans or people who profited from the slave trade to support them, because they profited and benefited from it. They still benefit from it. The African people must come together, i.e. Pan-Africanism. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Issa, so much for your call and your thoughts. There are four things I try to cover in the next half an hour with everybody at 410-319-8888. One is, Joseph, let me turn to you first, because I think that one of the things I was really struck by, and then somebody mentioned it to us when we were at the Creative Alliance looking at this, is that this is the way you've created this mural is like a symphony. And I looked at this piece. It says a symphony in May, an A major bold line. That literally, this is you're thinking of this as a work of art, but a work of music, and actually something's being composed about it. Talk a bit about that.
Well, when something has been said before, you have to find another way of saying it that makes your position a little bit more unique than the other person's. And certainly I didn't want to go over and rehash some really wonderful efforts that have come before me, such as Tom Feeling's work. I think Tom laid the groundwork. But I wanted to make my mural devoid of sentimentality and pathos. And so I had to try to find a simpler way to tell the story. And I thought the simplest way alludes to something Leslie talked about earlier, about the cave paintings, which when we look at the cave paintings of Lascaux and the Blackfoot Indians in North America and that type of thing like that, it's just very simple line mark makings, a little tonality or something like that. So I wanted to try to design a picture that a child could look at and put together all of the pictorial kind of cues and come up with some type of answer and solution of understanding what this picture was about. The idea of a symphony of marks and lines, something that is transcended in the sense of that this is a major work. We have to go through the first phase, which is Mother Africa. The second phase, this is confrontation and conflict. The third movement of it is death at sea. The fourth and final movement is the capitulation of the new world. So I wanted to create a heroic epic kind of statement about this, something, again, that you could not just dismiss and turn away from in a very instant, that you could not dismiss it with one glance, that you can't fold the book and put it back on the shelf. It had to be confronting. It had to have enough force and power that it provoked conversation, that it allowed the viewer to enter into the piece, but it stood its own ground. And I hope that I have in some way tried to measure up to the idea of what a symphony is. Because the symphony I had in mind was Beethoven's Third Symphony, which I think is also known as the Heroica
Right.
Symphony. Yeah.
Right.
So that was my intention, this simple language to tell a beautiful story. And then when you add to that the idea of a love story in the middle of all of this insanity, I thought it was great. Then I met this brother, African brother, who lives in Great Britain. His name is Tunde Jegede, and he's a brilliant composer. And later, through, you know, 6 degrees of separation, we find out that he is an acquaintance of the director of the Baltimore Symphony, and they are well aware of his work. Well, I met with Tunde here in America for the first time during the filming of our documentary on the same subject as The Middle Passage. And he and I got together and said, hey, you know, why don't we get together, and I think I'd like to put some music to this effort. So we're in the process more than a year now of Tunde composing the symphony and me trying to complete this this work of art, which we hope will be global, because this is the preliminary drawing for a lithograph. The whole end game is to have a lithographic mural, 40 copies made, placed on 60 continents, with an educational component attached to it. That's the end game.
Very powerful. And we, folks, this is something I really, really encourage people to come and see this. This is only going to be up through the end of the month. It is at, and this Friday night is a very special celebration for it all. And you should all join us at the Creative Alliance for that evening. And I there's a couple of things I thought about in looking at this. One of the things I thought about, you know, we're seeing the Occupy Wall Street stuff go on around America now, all over the place. And one of the things I thought about looking at this mural keeps popping back, something I've been working on for a while, this idea, is that there would have been no capitalism without slavery. There wouldn't have been a 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th century European capitalist system. There would never have been an America. There would never have been the American capitalist system, any of that, without the exploitation of slavery. It would never
have existed. I agree that it wouldn't have evolved as quickly. You know, I don't know if it never would have happened, but certainly I don't think it would have evolved as quickly and without you know, the input of the Africans.
And I mean without cotton, sugar, tobacco,
right,
form the basis of the wealth of the Western world.
That's free labor,
with African slave labor. And so, but out of that is what Bosch and I were talking about during the break, is that as Ho Chi Minh's poem once wrote, without the pain and dislocation of winter, you never feel the warmth and beauty of spring. Mm-hmm. That what was born, though, was a culture out of the African diaspora that has defined America and the world, changed the nature of existence. And all that comes out of the birth of the Middle Passage, the madness and the beauty.
It's the agony and the ecstasy. Because in my estimation, I look at the Middle Passage and I look at the aftermath and the people who survived and thrived and have given us great legacies. We have we are not underdeveloped. I tend to take great exception to that statement. I think that because we've been locked or we have been prohibited from allowing the rest of the stories to come forward around this history, and those stories can't come forward without the catharsis of interaction of many different kinds of people coming from many different spheres of experience. We don't know all of those stories, and those stories educate us, they teach us, they enlighten us. And we have extraordinary achievements. We have extraordinary contributions. America would not be America without the African contribution. There is no way possible that any of this could have happened without the African presence. So I am always asking myself, what would my history, my legacy, my family's history would have been without the presence, without the intervention, as it were, of a Middle Passage catharsis, as horrific as it was? I still am trying to grapple with those stories that have yet to come forward because people are so mired in their silence. I'm like, come on, we've got to get on with it. We are losing history in as we continue to evade, to deny, to run away from certain truths and certain realities. You know, historians are, they're basically truth tellers. All historians and artists, all we're trying to do is get at the root of something. What was the rationale? Why did this happen? What did it mean? What is its reality? What is its impact now? How does it change, alter, contour our lives? How does it give character and meaning to our life? And those are the stories. Those are the kinds of stories because, you know, in my other life also, too, I'm the chair of the board of the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. The question is, what kind of stories do we need to tell? We don't need to recapitulate all of the history that we already know. We need to look at that history and see how it connects to the other bridges, to the other realities that have yet to come forward.
I think Leslie has an excellent point that she makes, and that's something we have to continue to do is forge forward and have the difficult conversations that you know, T.S. Eliot talked about, those things that we too much discuss with ourselves. I think some of these things we have to release, and we have to be open to hear these other stories that are out there because they are dying off. As people move on, a new generation, there's a bunch of stories never told or swept under the rugs and not mentioned. And so I agree wholeheartedly. I'd be interested to hear what the rest of the guests have to say about it.
Yeah, me too.
I agree with Leslie for sure.
Rosalind and Rosalind Bashi, we haven't heard from you all. Why don't you chime into this?
Well, as far as the relationship to slavery and capitalism, it was, you know, definitely, you know, intricate part of capitalism. The you know, expansion of you know, Western global capitalism and slavery go hand in hand. So one of the questions becomes, you know, collectively, do African people overall, you know, benefit from a capitalist construct? I'm sure there are many of us, you know, who still manage to strive and persevere in that construct. But overall, when you look at people of African descent globally, are we benefiting from capitalism? And if we aren't, do we need to seriously think about changing it, that construct, and our relationship to it?
Rosalind?
I wanted to chime in a little bit about the comment of, you know, our culture, you know, from, and to quote George C. Wolfe, who wrote this play at the museum, from our pain has come a culture that is so complex. And I agree with that. From the pain of the Middle Passage and slavery, we now have a culture that is just so beautiful and so complex. And we wouldn't have had all of those things without the Middle Passage and without slavery. But at what cost? Like, I appreciate the beautiful culture that we have, but the cost was so great. And I think none of us will ever really know what Africa could have been had it not been for slavery. You know, you hear the comments of, you know, African culture is this or that. Who knows how far Africa would be at this point as a technological leader, as a leader of arts and humanities, had it not been for the Middle Passage. So while I recognize and I enjoy the beauty and the complexity of the African-American culture and the contributions that have come because we were enslaved and brought to this country, I think that the costs were way too great.
Well, this would be a discussion I think we should have for a couple of shows, just wrestling with this particular subject. And this is what Joseph Norman's piece has created in us, these discussions we need to have among ourselves. And let me go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. Daki, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Well, Daki, good to hear your voice.
Yeah, God bless you. You likewise. One, as a person who loves Morgan, who's trained at Morgan, somebody, the great James Lurks and others, Dr. Benjamin Quarles, great historian, as you know, as well as going to other places. One thing I wanted to say, first of all, I want to thank the people who worked on that middle-class passage piece, because slavery is ongoing. It is ongoing in our consciousness. And when we think about Dr. John Henry Clark, with his great scholarship, we think about Dr. Carter G. Woodson, The Miseducation of the Negro. And even when we think about Minister Malcolm X, it talks about house Negroes and field Negroes, that consciousness that still prevails. The point I just want to make, Dr. Chimwook, who taught me at Morgan also in philosophy, was from Trinidad. He thought about Frantz Fanon and the thingification of a people, and we were thingified as a people. The last point I just want to make is that when we talk about African art and music and song and dance, African culture is every our history linearly, past, present, future. Our thing is so awesome. I mean, I was in Mozambique when we were fighting for the liberation of South Africa. You know, I worked on that thing for 20 years, and thank God South Africa is a step closer to freedom. And one of the things I saw was this magnificent mural. It's called the Freedom Mural. And it talks about the same consciousness that your artist talked about, you know, the impact of our glory days, the colonialism, and then what happened as we bounced back to fight back for liberated Africa. The mistake that we make is this. When we stand in the door of no return, that was Roy Allen or Alamina in Ghana, when we stand in that door, we African Americans and African diaspora, it no longer is a door of no return. It is a door of return because we are back. You know, we are back in spite of thinking we would never come back. And also, lastly, I'll stop here. It is a mistake to think in terms of the contributions of African people to the world by way of the Maafa or the Middle Passage alone. We contribute to the whole civilization on this God called Earth. You know, I mean, Second Idea, like the Second Idea from Senegal, you know as well, the African Legend of Civilization, we published that at Third World Press. I mean, I could go on and on about this major contribution. And it is a mistake when we can talk about Dr. Lester King had not to be ashamed of herself. Dr. Merle Johnson was the director of education at Reggie Lewis. Heard her say was ceremoniously dismissed less than a few weeks ago, and that's a House Negro move without notice. It is outrageous, and we're going to demonstrate this Reggie Lewis as much as we love about the creator. We need to stop this type of House Negro mentality. Thank
okay.
you for the art.
Thank you, Doc. All right. I mean, when we think of, I didn't quite get everything Doc was saying at the very end about the museum, but when we come back to what's going on Friday night, I wanted to get the our listeners a chance to hear a little bit more about what Roslyn's bringing and what you're bringing that night, Bashi, to get a sense of what the performance is going to be, as well as the night of discussion, which we'll turn to Leslie and Joe for. Roslyn?
Yes, Bashi and I have been collaborators and working together for many years, so I'm glad to be on the program with him again at Creative Alliance.
Hey, Ross.
We both at the heart know that art for art is one thing, but art for social change and trying to move the community forward is what we're all about. So I've written two short pieces, and the pieces take place, one scene takes place on the plantation, and then the next scene takes place now in the 21st century. The next thing goes back to the plantation, and then the next thing brings us now, because I'm interested in what are those trickle down effects that we are still dealing with. And the first thing, like I mentioned when I first called, is about the black family. We see a man who's being sold off of the plantation, and we see his wife and his children saying, no, don't take my daddy, don't take my daddy, we need him here, don't sell him off to Mississippi. And then we come to the 21st century, and we see two little girls praying, my daddy is in prison, please over him, praying for their daddy who has been taken away from their family through the prison industrial complex, those direct links then and now that we're still dealing with. And then the second scene simply deals with what I consider over-sexualization of black women in particular, that if you look at the hip-hop music videos today, if you look at a lot of popular cultures today, the black woman is being overly sexualized, hyper-sexualized. Where does that come from? The booty shorts, the booty dance, and the tight pants, the weaves down the back, whatever. We're getting to a lot here. But where does that come from? Does it have anything to do with when we were on the auction block and being forced to be the sexual image of these slave owners that were purchasing us? Does that sexualization come from the fact that African women were raped continually, that African women during slavery were just basically used to breed the next child? So in looking at women today and black women today, how we are carrying ourselves, and where does that come from? The way the image that we see in the music videos of Nicki Minaj, and I'm sorry, I'm not a fan of Nicki Minaj, so I'll put it out there, but what is she teaching our young people? I don't think we can continue to look and say, oh, look at what the white people did to us during slavery, because now during today, yes, it was done to us then, and some of those trickle-down effects are still there because of that, but what are we now doing to each other because of that legacy, and how can we break that, and how can we recognize, wait a minute, this isn't like me, this isn't my nature as an African person to do this or to do that. So nature. Where did I learn this behavior from? And therefore, how can we break these negative behaviors that we continue to see persisting in our community today. So they're just two short scenes, one looking at the plantation and one looking at the 21st century.
Whoa, all right. Yeah,
it covers a lot.
And it covers a lot. And Basha, your film is going to be shown that evening.
Yeah, we'll be showing an excerpt from a full-length film, Me, Myself, and Us. And in this excerpt, we'll be dealing with a character. His name is Hassan Brooks, that was developed by Robert Lee Hardy originally as part of his one-man show. And basically, this young man is dealing with schizophrenia. And today, you know, in the U.S., a lot of our young men, young women also, black women, men in elementary school or sometimes even earlier than that, are being put on all kinds of psychiatric drugs, Ritalin or et cetera. What are the long-term effects of this, coupled with many issues that these children may be dealing with in the household and in the community? So this character, basically, he's talking to his psychiatrist, and he's exploring these things. And he's still, you know, has a enough clarity, you know, to pinpoint, you know, the causes of it. So in film, being a very, image oriented medium, similar to visual art, we used images from the Middle Passage that you see throughout the piece, and so it's left to the audience, you know, saying to make the connection of the Middle Passage to the experience of Hassan Brooks.
I really do encourage everybody to come out, and I know that Joe Norman, you'll be up here for the Joseph Norman, you'll be up here for this.
Absolutely, I can't wait to see my friends again. And Mark, I have to say before we end, I wanted to really thank Leslie and the Creative Alliance. Leslie invited me to apply to the Creative Alliance and expressly for this project, and the Creative Alliance have really created a great space for artists to conceive projects and to make different types of transitions. And it has been such a success for me that I really plan to relocate to Baltimore.
All right.
In the next 2 or 3 years.
Yay!
You like that?
Welcome,
another
Joe.
Outstanding.
Another great artist comes to town and lives with us. I love it.
Yes.
And Dr. Leslie King Hammond, thank you for the inspiration you've given this community and what you keep doing. And will you be there Friday night as well?
No, I have. I'll be in Kansas City doing a lecture on Romeo Bearden.
Well, as you should. That's what you do. So I want to thank all of you for being here tonight. Dr. Leslie King Hammond, Joseph Norman, Bashi Rose, Rosenkauffman earlier with us was M.K. Asante. I encourage everyone to come down. It's only up to the end of the month. Call 410-276-1651. Friday night, Slave Ship, The Middle Passage today. It starts at 8 p.m. You can call about ticket information. There'll be an incredible conversation going on, as well as looking at the mural, as well as a bar which you can buy what you want as well, a great restaurant right close by. But you can go there and the conversations will take place, and you'll see the play, see pieces of the film, and be inspired by the mural of Joseph Norman, which surrounds the walls. And thank you all so much for being with us today.
Right, thank you for having us.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
It's been great. I want to remind you, as we leave here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Aronson and Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new interviews you haven't heard before, and to find out information about our guests and their work and what they're doing, just join us on the web at SteinerShow.org. And for public radio to be EAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.